You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, and my guests today are Shauna Karish and Jesse Hilligus of Shauna Karish Equine. Thank you so much for joining me, you guys.
It's our pleasure.
We're happy to be here.
Well, I'm very excited. This is our first duo on the Stable Management Podcast, and I think it's an exciting topic for you guys. It's desensitizing horses to unfamiliar or spooky stimuli, and we're going to jump right into this. So could you guys explain what desensitization means in the context of horse training for those who maybe don't really know much about it? And can you also explain how it differs from flooding or habituation?
Yes. And it's a great question. And so desensitization is a process of trying to get them, you know, just like it sounds, to get them less sensitized to stimulus. It's often new things, foreign things, unusual things that they will have their bigger reaction to. But sometimes we've unintentionally created a response to something that's a little bit more hardwired now, you know, like we've tried to get over clippers or that jacket on the fence or whatever it is. And it's only increased to being more and more sensitized. And so sometimes we are dealing with familiar objects and trying to change their, I think of it like scales, you know, like we're putting more weight on the other side of the scale. So we're starting to change how they feel from instead of being maybe worried to thinking, okay, it's actually pretty good. So we work a lot with what we call systematic desensitization, because desensitization to really be best, we want to go slow enough that we're really letting them process and growing more familiar with in their time. And this is, I guess, this is a great question, Haley, because this is where it really differs, I think, is when a lot of times people set out to do desensitization, but without the understanding of actually the science of behavior and how this learning can actually work. And we've all seen this, like a horse is tied or being held and somebody has a stick with a bag on the end. And the point is to try to get them desensitized to the bag. Well, oftentimes the person goes about it just thinking, you know, because this is how we've historically done it. So it's kind of a newer awareness of a little bit slower way to do it. But they go about it until the horse stops responding, till the horse it stops fighting. And oftentimes it is misinterpreted as, oh, good, he's over it. But a lot of times what has happened is we've gone into what we call flooding, where it is they've tried and they fought and they've tried and they fought and they tried to get away from it. And finally, they gave up and said, all that fighting is not working. And they kind of start slipping into what can be called learned helplessness, where now they just stand and tolerate it. But mentally, they're still in that same worried place that they were in the beginning. They've just stopped showing that overtly. So now they've kind of internalized it and kept it in. And oftentimes it can result in being more, this is the problem with flooding, the potential problem with flooding is it often can lead to sensitization not only to, let's say, the bag and the stick, but it actually can learn to lead to sensitization related to the person, the area it happened in, all sticks in general, all wavy wafty things in general, you know, so they can, and they can really break down the trust between the horse and handler. So it is, the risk that you have involved there, even though it may be perceived as one thing, oftentimes leads to a sensitivity and not the best generalized desensitization towards new, scary, unusual things. Horses tend to be what we call neophobic, meaning they find new sights, new sounds, new things, new situations to be worrisome. They look first and think, oh no, what is that? And we've all seen that, of course. And so it's kind of like they have this stranger danger and they go around thinking, oh no, oh no. And with the positive reinforcement, when we use it, because we really do systematic desensitization coupled with counter conditioning, which is where the use of food comes in, and the trying to take something that they want, they like, they desire, and pairing it with new and unusual stimulus. So pretty soon it's creating the good feeling. New things create the good feeling of the positive reinforcement. So it's a way that we can do it in a way that is creating good feelings and tying that into there without putting them in a place of being worried and feeling kind of out of control about something that scares them, and keeping them in more fight or flight. We shoot to keep them in a more relaxed state.
Definitely. So for counter conditioning, I think a lot of people might have heard about it when training dogs. I know that's something that I've heard about often. Do you ever worry about poisoning, so to speak, the reward by introducing it with something that maybe frightens the horse? I know that's something that people worry about with dogs, is if they say lure them to something that scares the dog with a treat, that they may poison that treat then, and the dog is not so inclined to come for the treat then anyway.
Yes. And that's a really good example, because it's one of the things that Jesse and I say all the time is that positive reinforcement can be done poorly like anything else. You know, we think it's all 100% good, but we can have that kind of, it can be coercive still, you know, but just like you're talking about with kind of the luring and having them work so hard for this valuable commodity that they push themselves past their comfort zone. So I think that's part of the awareness of trying to learn how it's done. And we really try to be sure that we are going at a slow enough pace. And oftentimes we're going to work at liberty if we can. So if they need to walk away, they can walk away. And we also tend to keep other food sources out. So if it's, we don't want it to be like the only way you're going to do it is if you get so close to this or tolerate this thing that inside is really scary. So there's some tools we use to help prevent that, but it is definitely something that can happen if you're not aware of their emotional state. Their emotional state is our A number one.
And this happened to me while teaching my horse Santino to trailer load. I would get out the best goodies for him at first before I recognized how worried he was about the trailer. I would get out the best goodies for him, and that included carrots, apple pieces, like 15 kinds of treats. And pretty soon, but I always would feed the carrots in those moments where he seemed the most, you know, it was the hardest for him, just to help him out. And before you know it, he didn't want carrots. So that was a huge learning experience for me to recognize that I needed to back down. I needed to give him the time. And yes, he was doing it for the food, but then eventually he was like, no, this is not helping.
Yeah. And I think an important component in here, when we do positive reinforcement correctly, we're actually engaging their seeking system, which becomes part of a game. And like they've done studies where they gave animals free food and then they taught them to hit a lever for food. They tend to ignore the free when and then gave them both options back. And they tend to ignore the free food and go to the lever for food. So it is engaging them in that game and playing the game is really an important component to keep things moving forward and keep it really fun for the horses.
That's so interesting. And I love the real world example. I'm sure that other people have dealt with that before and maybe didn't put two and two together on that one. So I really appreciate that. So if you're walking a horse through something new, maybe say a tarp that they haven't seen before, or clippers or loud noises, what is your general process for introducing them to something like this that you might assume would be a little bit frightening to them?
Yeah. And that's you know, we kind of assume, we always ask the question, is this okay with you? Because sometimes we think it's no big deal, or 99 of my other horses never thought it was a big deal. But any horse can find something that surprises us, you know, to be worrisome. So when we recognize that, really trying to realize it is their reality that it is scary. Sometimes we just go, it's just a jacket on the fence. But to them, it is their reality. So whatever it is, we try to respect that and go, okay, I get it. I hear you. Let's back off and come about it slower. Because sometimes we approach things not knowing we're going to get that response. But if we're going about it where we're anticipating, this is a big deal, like a tarp, you know, you're going to assume more times than not, it is a big deal. And so let's say the first thing we might do is put it on the ground and weight it so it's not wafting in the breeze, you know, keep it as still as possible. We would have them at liberty, and we'd have it far enough away that we are approaching it and they can make the choice to approach it or not. But I have a chance to watch where it starts, where it's far enough away, where it's not that big a deal, to where I can figure out where does it look worrisome. And so we're going to start far away. And for some horses, it may be that they take us right up to it. Some horses are super curious and they're like, I want to see it. And you're like, okay. And then we'll still stop and say, okay, but you may not be as comfortable as you're acting. You know, but sometimes curiosity gets them up there, but they can still be quite fearful. But we will start far away. And as they looked at it and were approaching, from, you know, maybe it's 20 feet away still, we would click and reinforce. So the click telling them, yes, we like what you did. It's a bridge signal. And then we'd feed them. And then we may take a loop and walk away for a moment. Because as we're approaching something that they find worrisome, and to figure that out, we're watching for really subtle body language. We're looking, does the lip get a little square when that's not normally how it is? Does the chin get extra pointy? Does the head come up a half inch? Do the eyes get a little tinted and spiked above them? And, you know, so watching the subtle things to see when tension creeps in to their emotional state. And so as we walk forward, there still is going to be the adrenaline's building just a little bit. So we try not to even take them all the way up to it, but just walk a couple steps forward, reinforce, and then take a walk away from it for a moment to let their adrenaline come back down. And get them, because we can get what's called trigger stacking, where it's adrenaline on top of adrenaline on top of adrenaline till it's just like watching a scary movie and the phone rings. You know, the phone can ring all day long, no big deal. But when your adrenaline's piling up, you just jump out of your skin. So we take them away and let their adrenaline come back down, get them back kind of calm, and then we'll walk a little bit closer. And we do that preemptively, you know, so we're not waiting till it looks like they're really worried. We're kind of doing it as a process where we can, and if they're at liberty, where they can walk away. If they have a problem with it, they can walk away. You can leave. It's fine. And we'll just take that as information. But I think it's important for people to also recognize sometimes when they're at liberty, it'll look like a very casual walk away. But that might be them saying, I can't deal with that. And I don't want to deal with that. So it takes this extra acute sense of paying attention to those. And then we just continue to move forward. And sometimes it's not all in one day. And we may go off and do something else for a little bit and let it go, and then maybe reapproach it again until eventually they're getting more and more bold with it. So it is definitely a slow process.
Another little key component in there is practicing short sessions. The shorter, well, not necessarily the shorter, but shorter sessions are super powerful for helping them to feel confident. And then they take that time with the latent learning, with that digesting time, to help them to be able to process it all, to recognize that they made it through, they're safe, they're okay. And then it helps them to, the next time they come out, they often are quite, have a different outlook on that situation.
And that, I think that also, it's a good point that Jesse brings up. And I think it kind of dovetails into that. If we know it's something, let's say we know the horse doesn't like the trailer, You know, we know that, but we still need to work on the trailer, and we feel like we've done some other things first, because we always recommend don't go right to a hot spot. You know, go do some fun stuff and get them in the training and feeling confident, bold problem solvers. But let's say we know that they don't like the tarp or they don't like the trailer or whatever the thing is that we decide it's time to maybe approach a little bit. We recognize that when they look at the trailer, they probably think, oh no, it's going to be 45 minutes of this. And it can just pile and pile and pile up. But if they're going, oh no, and then they take a couple steps forward and we reinforce quite a bit, and then we back off and say, that's great, that's all we're doing for today. A lot of times it teaches them that thing didn't equal or didn't lead to what I thought it was going to lead to. Like the trailer may predict this 45-minute battle, or the trailer or the tarp may predict whatever that might be. So as we back away from that and say, that's all there was to it, they're like, well, that didn't even go anything like I was fearful it would go. Because if they're not doing it, it's a fear, and it's a genuine fear in them that they're worried about. So there's a lot of learning and saying, see, it didn't even go there. It was very easy and positive versus and very, you know, calming as opposed to getting them rattled.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I think everyone has probably been guilty at one point or another, likely unintentionally, of making the session a bit too long, you know, saying, oh, if I just achieve this, then I'll let him be done. And that doesn't always work for that horse. And you end up being out there for an hour or more and not really making any progress at the end of it. And you and the horse just end up more frustrated. So I like that you've mentioned keeping the sessions short, coming back to it later if you need to, but keeping it short and positive for the horse.
Yeah, and I was a traditional trainer for a long time before making the switch to positive reinforcement with Shauna. And we are just definitely, most of the time, we're not taught to recognize the small, subtle facial expressions, what their body language is doing. And recognizing that now with my own horses, or, you know, the horses that we work with on the road, has been huge for my shift in understanding and my empathy that I have for them. Because it gets to the point where you're like, I think that you're fine, but truly, what's going on inside? It's not just about what you're seeing on the outside. Might be a horse that's standing there looking calm, but is that really what's happening? Or are they a little shut down? Or, you know, if they're walking away, that might not be a big thing, but it's a lot of times that's very loud language for some of them.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's something that we could all probably strive to do better with, is paying attention to those more seemingly minor body language details, because they really can't tell us a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And here's a little example with Bugsy. Was a horse I had, and he didn't like the trailer. And this is going to reiterate on the short session kind of thing. He would rear if you made him go to the trailer at all. So I started it, and, you know, I ended up recording every single session. And at the end of it, but it was spread out over months. And because of just things going on in my life, and, you know, I couldn't get back to it. I thought I was going to work straight through it, kind of, you know, in a short period of time. And it ended up being like sometimes weeks and weeks between sessions. Well, when it was all said and done, I went back and looked at the recording. It was 9 sessions, and it was like 45 minutes total. So in 45 minutes, I never would have gotten him on the trailer if I did 45 minutes straight, but 45 minutes kind of properly punctuated with the positive reinforcement and a break and letting it go, it went much, much faster because of that latent learning, and that letting them digest it and have it feel safe and not a fight was really, really powerful.
Yeah, that's such a good point. So speaking of body language, can you talk about how important is timing and our own body language when we're walking a horse through a desensitization type exercise?
Yeah, I think it's really important. You know, there's so many people that particularly, like, you know, there's certain people that have, you know, started riding older, or, you know, and they see something that, you know, the construction workers are at their barn next to the arena, and they go out and they immediately are thinking, oh no, Well, of course, the horse then says, oh, what's wrong today? You know, so our own body language and our own tenseness and our own worry and our own lack of trust, and frankly.
Perspective on what that might, like for us now, that would be exciting.
Yes, we'd be like, oh, good.
It's a training opportunity.
But it is, but it really can rattle everybody. And I think that because they're such, they're herd animals and they're very, very sensitive to our body language because they don't have verbal language. So how they communicate with each other is a tiny switch of a nose. You know, the nose goes to the side. They're like, I hear you. You can watch it when you really start watching that they're paying attention to all that little stuff. Well, we kind of by and large have only been taught to, oh, he's over threshold when he rear and struck at somebody, you know, but well, he was over threshold long before that. We just missed their body language. So I think it's, and it really is a two-way street because it should feel like a partnership. This is how we feel, that it should really feel like a partnership, truly. So when your partner says, I'm worried, when your horse says that, we don't go, oh, dismiss it. It just go on. It's, you're being silly. We stop and go, okay, I hear you. I hear what you just told me. Now let's back off and see if we can't come up with a plan. But likewise, we have to do the same with ourselves. There's so many people that are just taught to get back on the horse and try not to letting people process that they might be truly fearful. You know, they may really have some, you know, PTSD kind of things going on from an accident they got into with a horse. And I think it's important to stop and build that trust as a two-way street. The more you work with your horse at liberty and you watch him make decisions and choices, the more you feel like we're kind of leaning on each other and I'm pretty sure I know what he's going to do. And likewise, they develop that same sort of relationship and leaning on you. So it's important that both of you are feeling like we are in here together. If either of us is worried, we need to back off and address that till whichever party needs to get more confidence. And I think that is really important to do and to feel that it's okay. We have a way through it. It doesn't mean you're going to be stuck there. But if we try to push it down, I think we oftentimes will keep cycling. We flood ourselves.
I think that's the exciting too thing about positive reinforcement. There is always a way through it.
Yeah.
Shauna's book from a million years ago was you can train your horse to do anything. And by the time you're done reading that book, you truly believe it. And doing what we do, we believe it because it is the truth. And that's, I think that's the fascinating and fun part of it because everything now we just look at it like a challenge, a fun challenge. And not a big scary, even horses who are aggressive or, you know, really struggling with some things that can be dangerous to themselves or people.
And I think it's important there. You got to recognize, does the owner or the person have the tools or the wanting to work through it? Because some things may take a long time and a lot of steps. But if they're really committed, there is a way to get past a lot of the big traumas that the horses bring to the equation.
Yeah, what a good point. Somehow we're already coming to the end of our time today. I feel like it's really flown by. This has been such a great reminder for people who are familiar. Well, I can tell you guys are passionate, so I really I love that. And I think it's been such a good reminder for people who are familiar with the topic and such a great learning experience for those who maybe are not. But if you could wrap us up by telling us, what are some of the common myths or misconceptions that you hear about desensitizing horses or positive reinforcement, that would be perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Here will be one, that using food makes them mouthy. The food doesn't make them mouthy. It's a delivery and our timing, which you brought up and we kind of didn't touch on as much, but the timing is important because that's what makes it mouthy. As food is delivered while it is a reinforcer. So if they're doing something we don't really want more of or don't recognize that we might not want more of, we can be reinforcing a behavior. But the food is not the problem. We worked with aggressive, biting horses utilizing food and change that all around. I think another one is that it's always going to take a whole lot of times and steps, and it's not going to be practical with real real life situations, but that's not true either. Sometimes you have to get your horse out of, you know, a tricky situation or beyond some trauma or something. But it is, it's not mollycoddling. It is not, you know, they're not only doing it for the food. They definitely, we build a good association and they love to do it regardless. What do you think?
I think those things are great. And just to say too, that there are a lot of people that actually do that with positive reinforcement, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because they just haven't had the help yet to be able to work past those things. So if anybody is seeing that those situations where horses are mouthy or horses don't have relaxation or they are doing it just for the food, those are situations where we know now that they need to have some help to escalate past those things.
Yes, because they're just getting stuck in a loop that is not really ideal positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. That's probably good because we could go on and on. You know, we got Bailey.
I love that. This is definitely a topic I can come back to and talk about for quite a while. I'm really enjoying this. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you both so much for joining me. It's been awesome discussing this.
Thank you.
It was so nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
And have us back anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.